Listeners, this is a bonus episode, a special bonus episode just for you guys. Those of you that listened to our last episode, we actually discussed the disappearance and death of Elisa Lam in preparation for the upcoming Netflix documentary, Crime Scene, The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel, which aired a few nights later. The three of us have watched that documentary, and we just want to give our thoughts about it briefly. If you did not listen to our Elisa Lam episode, I highly recommend that you go listen to it because we reference it. And I would also recommend that you watch the Netflix documentary.
It's worth watching.
It's worth watching. Yeah, but if you don't watch it, you can base your decision on whether or not to watch it on the conversation that we are about to have.
And it's probably some spoilers in here, so.
Yeah, spoiler alert. And I'll say this before we even start. If you know nothing about the Elisa Lam case, then I recommend that you stop what you're doing.
Because I'm about to ruin the image.
No. Absolutely not. That you stop what you're doing and then go do some research or listen to our podcast or other podcasts or anything else that has to do with the Elisa Lam case. And then watch the Netflix documentary.
Yeah.
If you watch the documentary first, it will ruin much of the allure of that case. It will ruin much of what made... much of what made that such a fascinating...
Yeah. Right. So many opinions.
Yes. All right. So let's just jump right in. I'll start off with this. Because the reviews coming back are actually very bad.
Oh, really?
CNET said, Netflix Cecil Hotel is a bloated, irresponsible mess. And if you guys watched the Night Stalker documentary, which if you have not.
I haven't watched it yet either.
There's a stark difference in those two documentaries.
Really?
It is a massive difference.
Is it because the Elisa Lam documentary is mostly based on like conjecture?
Yes, but the so documentaries have to be focused. They have to be narrow. Most of the time documentaries are not unbiased. They're normally biased.
Right.
Well, yeah.
And but most importantly, I feel like documentaries need to be focused. The disappearance at the Cecil Hotel was not focused. It jumped and shifted around a lot, whereas the Night Stalker documentary talks about the investigation to catch him. It doesn't really talk a whole lot about him per se. It talks about how difficult it was to catch him and the stress of trying to catch this very elusive serial killer. And there was a lot of tension in it. You felt when they interviewed the lead detective, where he talks about how he has to go home to his family, how he can't get these images of the crime scene out of his head, and how he would wake up at 3 a.m. and scan his house with his gun because Richard Ramirez knew where the lead detectives lived. That information had been leaked to the press. And, it does such a good job of drawing you into the investigation for this evil, evil person. Whereas disappearance at the Cecil Hotel, it starts to do that, and then it talks about something completely...
Skid Row.
Completely, yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about Skid Row for 30 minutes.
Well, there were things in that documentary that I did not know, and I was actually kind of watching it at the same time as one of my friends, and we were kind of texting back and forth, like, our little opinions here and there, and that was one thing that when she got to that part, she's like, holy shit, I had no idea that the population was that big, and it's like... That's more of like a commentary on like Los Angeles. Cause like, why do you have that many fucking homeless people?
Yeah.
Like,
just
your shit.
I think what the documentary was trying to do was it was trying to frame.
To make it like something could have happened to her.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to frame this area so that we're going to give you all of these possibilities that could have happened to her. Prior to her disappearance.
So when we did our episode and I got to read that book, and that book had a lot of details about the hotel that were really, really interesting, like little pieces of history. And then it seemed almost like the documentary goes into that Skid Row storyline, has that guy who was talking about living there and like, oh, there's some shit I saw and there was shit I was doing. Like,
I would have cut him out.
Yeah, no, there was, it was pointless.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. He was a very interesting character, but he had nothing
to do. This should have been a totally different documentary about it is the Cecil Hotel.
Social commentary on the state of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with Elisa, and it's not even remotely scary. It's sad.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
Also, they talk about Richard Ramirez, which I felt was unnecessary. You know, Richard Ramirez... did stay at the Cecil.
Yeah.
And presumably he even killed some people there. But that has nothing to do with Elisa Lam. Yeah. In fact, in the Richard Ramirez documentary, they don't mention the Cecil at all. You know why? Because it has nothing to do.
Because first of all, there's no proof he killed anybody there. Yeah, I think there was, if I'm remembering it correctly, which I didn't research any of this. This is just like, this is shit that I read over the years. Think there was an altercation where he may have raped a woman at the Cecil?
Don't get me wrong. He killed somebody there. Yeah. He killed or raped somebody there. I don't doubt that at all, given the time that he was there.
Yeah. But again, this is like pertinent to the Cecil, not pertinent to Elisa.
Right.
It's something that they could have peppered in for dramatic effect, sure. But at the same time, like...
It was clear they were trying to stretch...
Yeah,
I was gonna say if they cut all it out, that could have cut a whole episode. Right. Like it would have made it shorter.
Also, the good thing about the documentary is they had access to resources and people that nobody else did.
Mm-hmm.
The manager of the Cecil,
yeah,
the lead detectives on the case, the maintenance guy who found her floating body.
They didn't ask them any of their own personal experiences, really, like of working there and like things they had seen, things.
Well,
that
the manager did. The manager, you know, she gave a pretty good account. She was weird, though. I immediately thought she did it.
Her?
Yeah. I was like, oh, mystery solved.
Literally, the first thing my friend texted me was, I don't like this lady. She's suspicious.
Yeah.
She was weird.
And then she was like, they hired me to be the manager of this place, but I had never worked at a hotel before.
What?
You never worked at a hotel?
And they hired you to manage...
One of the Cecil, oldest hotels in Los Angeles, and you're okay.
She did it. I still think she did.
No. She had major sociopathic vibes.
Like yeah, she, I wasn't. Yeah, that was her. She was weird.
She seemed completely unaffected by the Elisa case, and then the only time that she showed any amount of like emotion about it is when they were like, "We need to take body dog, you know, corpse sniffing dogs. Yeah, cadaver dogs, and sniff around." And they were like, we need to get down to the dumpster. And she's like, you think she went out in the dumpster? Literally the only moment that she showed any sign of emotion about it was, oh, my God, maybe she's dead.
By the time that happened, she was a hardened vet. She had started working in the hotel in 2007. And so that's 6 years later, Elisa Lam disappears. And she even said, she talks about, you know, the first time she saw a dead body. And then she was kind of like, maybe like once a month we had a corpse.
I mean, did she not interview there before accepting the job? Like, she didn't do a research, or maybe she didn't care.
Maybe she just really needed.
You know
a job.
What I discovered from the documentary? How ignorant people are of the Cecil, like the history of it. When they talk to that poor couple from the UK, they were the ones that drank
the water. Yeah.
The water.
I don't care. I've never drank the water at a hotel before.
Let me tell you this. If I drink corpse water, I'm owning the hotel.
Corpse water.
It's now the Kaiser.
Oh, I'd be scarred for life. Scarred.
They seem perfectly like fine. Like, okay.
That was the weird thing. They seemed more off put by how gross the room looked already.
Yeah, yeah.
Than the actual water. They're like, ew, it's
those
gross in there. Like,
yeah.
But we were talking about earlier, remember last time we talked about, like, did Elisa not know, speaking of ignorance of the hotel, did she not know? But what I didn't realize was that the hotel was two different things. It was Stay on Main and Cecil.
Which,
and
if you saw Stay on Main,
You wouldn't even know it was the same hotel. Like, I was like, the trickery.
Even though they shared kind of the same building and they shared the same elevator.
Right. But they said it was two totally different lobbies, two totally different entrances.
I did like how they set up the creepiness of the elevator. They had the long shot down the hallway and how they called it the tunnel to hell or something like that.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that part either.
And they kept making a point that you could be sharing an elevator.
Oh, yes.
With, you know, a murderer
or
a rapist or someone that was a convicted felon because that's who frequented the Cecil. And you went on. So you're at Stay on Main and, you know, you get on the elevator. But
I would have checked out immediately.
I mean, that's under the assumption that you start hitting buttons like Elisa and then go to a different floor and see how shitty it is.
They also figured out the mystery of why the elevator door did not close.
Mm-hmm. She was accidentally pressing
the door open button, which
I don't
keeps
know.
The door open for 3 minutes, regardless of what you press.
Yeah, I was curious. I don't know how that works on, like, the elevator. Most elevators I've been on, you have to hold it.
Yeah.
Like, if you just, like, the elevator in my building, if you just press it, it's not going to stay open. But if you hold it, it'll stay open.
In our episode, this was an old building, old elevators. That could have been how.
Yeah, well, I was about to say more modern elevators, door open or door closed never seem to fucking work for me.
You just pressing the shit over there.
I don't want to talk to that motherfucker. Yeah. You know, like, you're hitting that button. That shit doesn't do a damn thing.
Right. That's
also
true.
This was the biggest thing to me that the documentary revealed, and that I didn't realize. Other web sleuths might have known this, but if I had known this, it would have changed my original take on the whole thing. It was the fact that the cadaver dogs tractor sent to the fire escape window.
Mm-hmm. It was the fifth floor tractor there, but then they didn't hit on her again. And then I think it was later on in the documentary they said that they did not take them past the water tanks.
They didn't. Well, they did say the dogs.
Didn't they say
on
they
the
went
14th
on the
floor? Oh. Which is the floor where the elevator weirdness happens, which is the top floor. That the dogs stopped at the window.
Mm-hmm.
And the window leads directly to a fire escape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To me, that kind of tells the story there, because part of the big mystery was, how did she get to the roof in the first place?
Right.
Yeah.
Only employees have access to the roof, which we found out in the documentary wasn't true. Even if you took the fire escape out of the equation,
right,
the door to the rooftop wasn't
even
locked.
Yeah, they said it was cigarette butts. Like, yeah, people had been up there.
It just set off an alarm if you opened it.
The alarm wasn't working.
Was not working.
Even though the manager said, no, it was alarmed and it was working. Yeah. But
The maintenance guy said the police checked it and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
But who
knows? Didn't they say you had to have a key too?
You had to have a key to turn the alarm off.
Okay.
But to actually get up there.
So it's possible
that Elisa Lamb could have gone to the window, the fire escape, and said, hold on, let me see if the door's... Oh, it's open. And just went up there. Mm. So that kills the whole idea that it could have been a hotel staffer because they were the only person...
It still could have been a guest or somebody that had been there, because if it's like somebody who fucking lives there and sees this girl in distress and knows how to get around the hotel and knows where the cameras are. Right, could have easily been like, yeah, girl, let's go up
but
to the roof.
They did make a good point that I was like, So if someone had to take her up there and put her in the tank, they would have had to carry her up there. Then once they got there to the tanks, they would have had to carry her up the ladder. Even though she was not a large person, but carry her up the ladder and then put her in there and close it and all that stuff, which I guess they were saying they would have been able to see some bruising or something from that person doing that. And there was no evidence of anything. There was nothing.
I'll say the documentary ultimately leans heavily on the coroner's assertion that she had a psychotic break or manic episode of some type and believed that she was running from someone or hiding from someone that did not exist. And in her attempts to hide, she went to the rooftop and gotten one of the water tanks and one was unable to get out because the water level was lower would have been needed for her to climb out of it. And the thing is I kind of believe that. Now, granted, it's a documentary. So like I said, they lean heavily in that direction, and all the evidence they present leads to that conclusion. They don't give much evidence to the contrary.
Yeah.
They do entertain the idea that it could have been foul play. But the way that they lay everything out for you leads you to believe that the coroner was correct. Also,
the date change.
Yeah. Also, when it talks about, okay, the weirdest dude in the documentary was that one guy who...
Or they just drug him through the internet.
No, not him. No. Which they could have cut, they could have cut him out.
That was a whole nother episode.
Yeah, whole other episode. Was the guy who was like, I just had to see her gravesite. So
I had a friend go there. And
you know, he was like,
he
was devastated that it wasn't something more nefarious than it was. And, and that was kind of the one of the themes the documentary was trying to get across.
I remember that guy now.
Was that everyone was wanting it to be something so fantastic and so, you know, salacious, and then it ended up not being that. And remember, we talked about this. I always felt that when they found the body in the tank, the case lost some of its luster. Like some of the mystery.
Well, because there's an end and a shitty one. But I don't know if it really changed my mind. I feel like they didn't make a great case because there wasn't anything new. I was honestly hoping that Netflix would have dug up, you know, some of their crime scene documentaries are really like, whoa, I never heard that shit before. There's nothing new.
That's true. There were a few things that I didn't know.
The whole TB thing was interesting to me. Oh,
that I knew.
I didn't know that.
I just felt like that's such a weird coincidence that it wasn't worth mentioning on our episode. But those are the kind of things that is a crazy coincidence, I gotta say. But I think those are the kind of things that carried it to its iconic status as a piece of internet lore. When the documentary, you know, near the end, essentially says, no, it was nothing more than this. It does get kind of preachy near the end, too.
Preachy.
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling that. It's a, like I said, it's a good thing to watch after you've exhausted the gamut of stuff about Elisa Lam that is already on the, that has been accumulated over the last 8 years. Go through that stuff first. Come to your own conclusion. Then watch Netflix documentary if you can get through the terrible pacing.
Nothing has changed for me. I think it's still just a big question mark. There's not really, you know, there's only so much evidence on either side of it. So it's just like,
I still have a lot of questions about that. But the questions that I think I have and some other people have don't really lead to anywhere that, you know, like there's some new amazing discovery. Either what the coroner said was correct or there was foul play. It's one of the two things.
Well, I mean, what the coroner said was definitely correct, right? Because that's, he's working off of the evidence that he has in front of him. And it's just like,
right.
You have to be able to give somebody a cause of death. You can't just be like, oh,
and here's what I think.
The only thing, the water tanks still kind of don't sit right with me. Because the tanks themselves did not have ladders. There was a ladder on the roof.
Yeah.
No, remember the tanks did have ladders.
It was on the roof and it was propped up.
There was a little short little ladder going because the tanks were on a platform. Right. So there was a short little ladder, but there was a ladder on the side of the tank.
But you remember the maintenance man was saying that she would have to climb up that one and then like shimmy across this little pipe. to get into the one that she was in.
Yes, that was another thing. She got in on the far tank.
Yeah. Right, but there was a ladder on the side of that tank, though.
It was, because she put it there and no one took it down. That's what I got from the maintenance man interview. That the ladders weren't on the tanks. It just happened to be ladders on the rooftop for you to access the top of the tank. The sticking point for the police was the ladder in the hatch.
Right.
The hatch was not closed and the ladder was on the tank. So
there was a point of contention. They couldn't really determine whether it was closed or not.
If I was this little old maintenance man who has to see this horrid sight I'm functioning off of pure adrenaline, I wouldn't fucking know if I closed that shit or not either. I'd be like, I don't know, I just saw a dead lady.
I still think it's odd that they didn't, when they searched the roof, the dogs came back with nothing. And I know they said, well, we didn't go search by the tanks. And we joked last week about, you know, the quality of LAPD sniffing dogs. But, you know, that's just awfully weird. I feel like
if the hatch was open and there's a breeze, obviously you're at the coast, right? So there's going to be a breeze. I feel like they would have smelled her.
You know, by that point, she had been in there some time.
Days, at least.
Yes, days that she had been in there. There is a theory that the body was put in the tank.
Later.
Mm-hmm. Somebody came back and said, ooh, you know.
Let me go put her in there.
And think about it. If you were a smart murderer, wouldn't you make it look like she did this herself? You know, what murderer is going to go through all the trouble to leave behind evidence?
Oh, but how would they have killed her before putting her in there?
You could smother somebody.
But wouldn't they have been able to tell that from the autopsy?
Not necessarily. Especially if somebody has been smothered and not choked. You know, like...
I think there might be can't you tell
who
if someone
says they killed her? Who says they didn't just throw her in the tank?
True, that too. But I mean, that's what I'm saying is like if somebody is smothered and then you throw them into water and they sit there for what, 3 fucking weeks? There's not a whole lot of body based evidence you're going to be able without hard bruising, without actual breaks.
Well, I guess I'm saying though, if they put her in there later, so she wasn't actually in there for 3 weeks. If they killed her and then held on to her and then put her in there later.
Well, but then even if you do throw her into the tank, there probably would have been some signs of decomposition prior to her being like floating around. Right. So I have to be like, I don't know. I just feel like, I feel like there are ways plausibly that you can do it. And cover your tracks. And I feel like, you know, people would drop bodies off in the water for a reason, right? It hides evidence.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
It does. It's but very destructive. I always say people who don't get caught committing murders when they kill people is all luck. It's not a lot of times because they planned it out well enough.
You should definitely, guys, make sure you watch Night Stalker, the Richard Ramirez documentary. It essentially, I've always said something about the police. The police do not solve crimes. They don't. You've never met a cop. And when I say police, I mean like the guys that are out doing police work, the uniformed police officers. You ain't never met one that solved a crime. Richard Ramirez is the luckiest dude ever. He was almost... You guys watch Dexter? Okay, I used to watch Dexter.
I watched like the first couple of seasons.
The problem is that Dexter got to the point where it was like, how is he not caught at this point? That's how it is with Richard Ramirez. So like, how could they not catch the guy? Like multiple times, he like literally just got up, literally ran away. Like, oh, please run away. Hey, come back, Richard Ramirez. Darn, we almost got him. Like, literally that happens in the show. So, yes, you are right. When murderers don't get caught, when murderers do get caught, it's a stroke of luck. It's either incompetence, they get sloppy, they leave behind some evidence, and a lot of times it's on purpose because they feel this hubris. Richard Ramirez didn't think he could get caught because, man, we really need to do an episode on him. I mean, I know we don't really do serial killers, but the fact that he was very brazen, like,
We should talk about it just because, like I said off mic to Kaiza and Tiffany, that was like the first serial killer that I ever really read about. And I was 11 and he scared the shit out of me.
He's a scary, like, he's a very scary.
We didn't have any curtains in our house.
He was looking in, right?
Yeah. So people could, could see into my fucking living room. So every time, my sister and I used to run down to the refrigerator to get something to drink and then run back upstairs. Like,
you don't fucking have curtains in your living room, do you?
No, yeah, no. Well, Scout, my dog Scout would let us know if Richard Ramirez, if the ghost of Richard Ramirez, he's dead now. He was so brazen that he would go kill someone at like 9 o'clock and be like, that didn't do it. Let me just drive over.
Oh no.
He'd drive over 3 or 4 neighborhoods and kill like 2 other people. He would kill people and then go next door and then kill people. There was a woman, who he killed. He tried to rape her, and her family states in the documentary that she was deathly afraid of being raped. She spoke about it all the time. Like, she was afraid that someone was going to try and rape her.
Can you imagine just sitting down for dinner and like
your grandma's like,
your sister's like, I don't want to be fucking raped. Yeah. Like, nobody was talking. Yeah, like,
hold on, grandma. Well, Richard Ramirez shows up at her house during the day and attempts to rape her. And she's able to fight him off to the point where he decides not to rape her, but he does kill her.
He
stomps her head in to the point where police were able to get an evidence footprint from her head.
Yes, they were
tracking him because he had a very specific pair of shoes that was only sold. There was the only size 11,
like New Balance or some shit.
Avias, yeah. They were sold in the United States.
Well, you know what? So I feel like I've seen, that's all I watch. I feel like I saw something about that because I remember the whole shoe thing.
So, yeah, he ended up leaving a shoe print and that's how they knew it was him. Well, his sexual desires were not satisfied because he was unable to rape this woman. Ugh. So he just, okay, I guess I got to find someone to rape now. So he went and drove to another neighborhood and raped a woman who was the neighbor of the evidence technician on the case.
Oh my God.
Now he did not know this. It just so happened to just be a coincidence, but she heard her neighbor yelling for help and she called the lead detective and was like, my next door neighbor, I think, has been raped by Richard Ramirez.
Jesus.
That's how bold he was. He didn't think he was going to get caught. He was driving around in a stolen, and by the way, the car he was driving around was stolen. He stole somebody's car, drove from neighborhood to neighborhood, raping and killing people, and then would just go hang out at the Cecil, like playing in the elevator. Actually, he used to kill people, come back to the Cecil, ditch his bloodstained clothes in the dumpster, and walk up to his room naked through the stairwell of the Cecil.
See, that was normal. That was just, you know, a normal day at the Cecil.
That black dude was like, hey, what's up, bro? Yeah. No, the black dude just said, you don't go above the 6th floor. That's where the craziness happens. Mm. Okay, so I didn't want to get off on that tangent about Richard Ramirez, but that's a good. You guys should watch those two Netflix documentaries and compare the two. The Richard Ramirez one was very, very good. The Lisa Lam one was kind of
eh.
You should listen.
It's
worth a watch.
It's definitely worth watching, but just, you know, keep a critical eye.
Yep. All right, so that's going to do it for this bonus episode that has gone way over time anyway.
Yeah.
But now we're going to go and record our next episode, which is about Luca Rocco Magnata. And this is a wild one. So be sure to give that a listen, and hopefully you hear our lovely voices again very, very, very soon.